Hello and welcome to Spieling the Beans with me, Dom Stevens, the storytelling podcast in which storytellers tell stories about telling stories. And welcome to the second season of the show, a season that, sadly, takes place in a very different world to that of the first. Now, the original plan for this season was to go back to the Edinburgh Fringe and record more interviews in person, as well as going over to America to record some as well, but unsurprisingly, those plans have had to change slightly. Fortunately, with the advances in technology, the show can continue from isolation, and hopefully it can cause some levity in a less than ideal time, the GCSE history question we're currently living through. I mean, it's not like there's that many podcasts to choose from right now, and that's hardly likely to increase over quarantine periods. Anyway, when I was thinking about who'd be the perfect guest with which to begin this season, one person came to mind. My guest this week is a classically trained vocalist, pianist, and musical director who just last week created
a fun little musical parody
to share with friends on Facebook to keep things light during these tough and unusual times. It was a parody of Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious from, of course, Mary Poppins, but rewritten to reflect the current situation. The song, basically overnight, became, rather ironically, a viral hit of its own, albeit in a very good way. Seen by millions and shared by leading figures in the entertainment world, the song rapidly spread across the globe, again in a good way. In our far-reaching and deep conversation, we discuss what sudden global fame has felt like, how music can tell stories, the importance of the arts in dark times throughout history and especially now, how comedic songs are able to reach people in a way that stand-up might not, how to approach musical direction, his inspirations, meeting Tina Fey and creating a very good viral hit in the midst of a very bad viral hit. And to make the first episode of season 2 even more special, we've got a Spieling the Beans first as we end our interview with a full live performance of another of his viral virus parody hits. But first, let's take a listen to the song that started it all.
Now when a virus comes along that's spreading like a plague, and POTUS and his lackeys have been nothing if not vague, well then you've got to trust the CDC and listen well, unless you want to bid our free society farewell. There is a super bad, transmittable, contagious, awful virus. And if we don't act quick in social distance, it will mire us in a stretch of quarantine that lasts until July. A super bad, transmittable, contagious, awful virus. And if you got a better cough in your arm, and if you got a better cough in your arm. Now back in 1918, influenza had its run, but half their docs were busy overseas with World War I. Today we have mass media and scientists to say, if you don't want this virus, well then stay 6 feet away. Super damn important that we practice isolation, because we're asymptomatic while it's in incubation. We'll overwhelm our hospitals if there's not mitigation. It's super damn important that we practice isolation. If we don't do it, then we're all gonna die. If we don't do it, then we're all gonna die. And so I hope at last you take the lesson here to heart, because it's already scary and we're only at the start. If you get bored, just think of the immunocompromised, who can't go much of anywhere unless it's sterilized. Oh, super bad, transmittable, contagious, awful virus. If we don't act quick and social distance, it will mire us in a stretch of quarantine that lasts until July. A super bad transmittable, contagious, awful virus. Super bad transmittable, contagious, awful virus.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome my guest for this week, Daniel Matarazzo. Dan, thank you so much for talking to me today.
Sure. Thanks for having me, Dominic.
No problem at all. Your latest creation, a parody of Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious coronavirus edition, has been viewed, I think, around 3.5 million times. Is this right?
It just crossed 4 million on Facebook.
Fantastic. That's incredible. So it's basically the population of New Zealand has seen your song. How does that feel?
It's a little staggering, honestly. I mean, I started these videos off kind of just making them for my friend group on Facebook, kind of hoping that would bring a little levity to a very serious, you know, kind of distressing situation that we're all going through right now.
Sure.
And just to see it take off the way it did was really, really overwhelming, I guess, would be the word.
Good overwhelming? Bad overwhelming?
I mean, good overwhelming on the whole. It's been really wonderful to see that the message of the song got across was that this is a very serious thing, but if we can't laugh at very serious things and find ways to bring some joy to it, then we're just going to get burnt out.
Absolutely, absolutely. What's been the most surprising element of this intense, sudden global fame?
I guess the big thing has been family members sometimes coming back to me and saying, somebody who doesn't know that I know you shared your video with me. And so that was one of the first things that really kind of solidified in my mind how big it had gotten.
And you've now got followers and figures such as Lin-Manuel Miranda, Alec Baldwin, Hank Green. Have you seen Hamilton? It would be rude to say no at this point.
I unfortunately have not seen it, but I have listened to the soundtrack on repeat so many times that it's probably burned a hole in my Spotify. It's a remarkable show. And I've loved Lin-Manuel even before that. His first show, In the Heights, to me was one of the finer pieces of theater that came out of that year.
Absolutely. Have you made contact with him, just in a purely nerdy point of view?
No, goodness, that would be very cool. But no, not yet.
Matter of time, I'm sure. So when did the idea of linking Mary Poppins and COVID-19 suddenly click? What was the eureka moment? Was there a particular lyric? How did it start?
So I had written two before that. I did one of Go the Distance, and I did We Can Beat the Odds, We Can Social Distance, and that seemed pretty down the center of the plate. And then I did another one to Part of Your World, which was kind of fun, and I enjoyed. And so once it started to seem like it was being very popular among my friend group, I said, oh, maybe I should really hunker down and try to do something with these. So I had been writing down kind of buzzwords that I'd been hearing in the media a lot. And, you know, just kind of humming around the house. I mean, goodness, we have nothing else to do now, as artists that rely on large groups of people to entertain. So, you know, I have a lot of time, and I was just kind of thinking about it, and, mitigation, isolation. I found all these kind of stacked rhymes, and I mean, I've loved Mary Poppins. I loved the movie growing up. I've been in the show, in a community theater production a couple of years ago, so I'm familiar with the material. So I guess that was something that helped me out as I was writing it, is the familiarity with the song. I was able to throw the lyrics into it quicker than I probably would have been if I didn't know the tune.
Yeah. And you've been in a ream of musicals over your life. What is your favorite musical, if you could only pick one, and why?
Oh, that's tough. That's so tough. I think probably West Side Story is my favorite musical.
Okay, why not?
I think it's the height of the storytelling that comes in the musical format. The music, the lyrics, the staging, the choreography, they're all just so well defined and so well tuned, and they just create the world for you. It's interesting to see Sondheim before he was writing his own music, to see how his lyrics lined up with Bernstein's tunes. I thought the pairing of the two of them was great.
Do you remember the first time you saw it?
Gosh, the first time I saw it. Yeah, it was the movie was the first time experience I had to it. It was my seventh grade music teacher. It was required viewing for all of her classes. That we would watch West Side Story and have a conversation about it and talk about the show.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, one of my questions is going to be, is there a particular teacher that stood out and inspired your love of music? Am I right to assume it might be the seventh grade one?
Yeah, I mean, she was so instrumental in kind of making me the musician that I am. But I've been so fortunate. I've had a string of really great teachers. It was certainly her. Her name's Anna Schneider. She was my seventh, eighth grade music teacher. Barbara Benglian was my choir director in high school, and she was just absolutely amazing. She won the National Teacher of the Year Award my sophomore year while I was there.
Wow.
Yeah. And then just a great string of mentors, too, even if they weren't people that I was in a classroom setting with, just people to be able to watch and observe and really see the way that they do the work.
That's amazing. So how does the National Teacher of the Year Award be conducted? How does one win a National Teacher of the Year Award? What made her surpass the others?
I'm unsure of exactly what the process entails, but I know there's a lot of recommendations that have to come through from not just from students, but I think from peers as well. And then each state nominates one finalist to kind of go to the National Teacher of the Year Conference, and then from those 50, one is selected to be the national winner. And she won it was my sophomore year, so that would have been 2006.
well, congratulations to her. It seems as though, in terms of how your song are stylistically, it seems sort of a mashup between Tom Lehrer and Weird Al. Are you getting that a lot? Are you fans of either? What are your inspirations in terms of comedic songwriting?
Sure. I mean, certainly fans of both. Love both of their work. I've gotten a lot of comparisons to Tom Lehrer, which is both honoring and a little frightening because his pantheon of work is so amazing. Yeah, I've always really, really enjoyed his stuff. And my gosh, Weird Al. I mean, I grew up on his parodies. They were just so inventive and fun. So yeah, I'm definitely inspired and influenced by both of them.
It seems as though comedy songs have a sort of longevity which stand-up doesn't necessarily have, that it lends itself to repeat listening. Why do you think that's the case?
It's interesting because I see where you're coming from in saying that. Now, oh, sorry.
Are you okay?
Siren's going.
Are you being raided?
But I can see where you're going with that. I think there's something musically with the rhythm of it, I think, that just kind of sticks in our brains a little bit more. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you look at the great stand-ups, like Carlin, I mean, the great parts of his act were rhythmic. I mean, he would find the rhythm in the words. If you look at his, like, Seven Dirty Words You Can't Say on TV skit, or, you know, all of these different ones, but he finds this cadence that just kind of makes it stick in your brain a little bit more. And I think the same is true, certainly for music generally, but I think comedic songs, you're able to, you know, your brain connects with the hook of the song, I think, in this really palpable way that gives it some staying power.
Fantastic. I'd never considered the Carlin connection before, but that's absolutely, it seems the case. Are you a fan of Carlin? Did you grow up with his...
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I love him. Love him. Him, you know, Richard Pryor, any of those old comics, they're great.
Fantastic. So you are, by day, a musical director, is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
At the Upper Derby Performing Arts Centre, if I've done my research correctly.
Yes. Yeah, that's home base for me.
And I think I'm right in saying that that's where Tina Fey got her start?
It is, yeah. It's the same summer theatre programme. It's Upper Derby Summer Stage, which is based out of the Performing Arts Centre.
Did you and Tina ever overlap? Did you ever meet?
We didn't. I've met her twice. I doubt she remembers me. She's very lovely though. But it was such a quick in passing meeting. But she's been wonderful. She does come back every now and again, and helps to do fundraising for the Performing Arts Center and things like that. So yes, we have crossed paths, but not in any kind of real sense.
Oh, cool. Have you seen Mean Girls the musical?
I did, actually. That was one of the fun experiences. We took our a group of kids that we work with, a group of performers, and we went up to see it. And she came out and did a talk back with them after the show, along with a couple other members of the cast.
Oh, amazing. Yeah. Do you remember any pearls that she managed to give to the group?
I mean, I think one of the things, and a lot of the other actors said this too, which was lovely, was to just trust themselves, to trust their own worth, and to trust that their best self is enough and is what people are looking for, that they don't have to try to be somebody else or try to fit into some kind of preconceived mold.
Fantastic advice. Really lovely advice. You're a classically trained musician from Temple University. Is this also correct?
Yes.
Fantastic. I've done my research.
Yes!
What so captivates you about music? What got you into it? What made you realize that this is what I want to devote my life to, essentially?
I'm going to walk into the land of cliche, but it's kind of always been a part of my life. There was never really a moment where I was just decided, like, oh, I'm going to do music. It's kind of always been there. I mean, my mom still has tapes of me from a very young age, walking into my aunt's apartment and just beelining for her grand piano. So it's kind of always been there. I started music lessons formally when I was in third grade, so about 9 years old. Mm-hmm. Was my first experience with the piano. I stopped lessons when I got to high school, and then everything from there is just a lot of playing. I would accompany our school choir. I would play for some rehearsals for the show musical, and, you know, just kind of kept going on from there.
Amazing. That's really lovely. So how do you approach What does a musical director do day to day, and how do you approach your style of musical direction?
Sure. So a musical director, in the grandest sense of the job, is responsible for the musical aspects of the show. So be that orchestral, be that vocal, be that any kind of, even in terms of underscoring or background music, that really all kind of falls under their purview. And so something that's important, I mean, not only in knowing the show, but in really having an idea of what you want the show to sound like. What is the ideal in your head that the show wants to be? And then how can you get it there with the group of actors that you have in the room? Because a lot of times you're working with a group of actors that maybe the composer was thinking about a larger group or was thinking about a smaller group. And you have to be able to be flexible enough to say, okay, this is what's on the page, but here's what really makes it work for this ensemble.
Did you have a sort of a guiding force in your early years who was a mentor in terms of this is how you should direct a large scheme of people in terms of creating a musical extravaganza?
Sure. And again, I feel very lucky. I've had a couple, which has been very fortunate. A lot of them through Upper Darby Summer Stage. I shadowed a great music director named Eric Thompson for a number of years. Gina Giacchero is another local Philly music director that's just been really instrumental in helping me to kind of find my way through the scene here and get in touch with the right people and watching them work too. My gosh, was just such a treat. They both music directed me at, you know, various points. You know, I was an ensemble member, or I was a principal character in one of their shows. So getting that experience was really lovely.
Do you have a favorite part that you've played?
Yeah, I do. I was, it was 2013. It was that summer I got to play Tevyan Fiddler on the Roof.
Oh, nice.
I mean, what an amazing role and what an amazing show. And my director was absolutely incredible. His name's Marcus Stevens. He's a lyricist right now, book writer.
Okay.
But yeah, he was a director for a time with the program. And really took me on the journey of the character.
Do you still have the songs lodged firmly in your mind?
Oh boy, yeah. If I were a rich man. Yeah, I don't think I'll ever forget that one.
Who could? Who could? that has thrown me. The fiddler angle has thrown me completely. but it's such a lovely musical. It is such a, it's got such a lovely warm sort of hugger, I think is the Norwegian phrase for it, the H-Y-G-G-A-E, where it's sort of familial and friendly and warm. It's got that feel to it.
Sure. And it's interesting because the whole show is, I mean, it's built on this undercurrent of a mass exodus of people being forced out of their homes, and that it kind of hangs over the whole show. And so it's interesting to me, Fiddler does something that I think a lot of great shows do, and it takes pain and hardship, and it shows you the fun and the beauty of it. I mean, the first act of Fiddler, if you take out one or two scenes, is a comedy. Mm. And then it really takes that turn in act two, but that struggle is always present.
Yeah. It seems weirdly apt politically now.
Sure.
Particularly in the recent years, and then almost a reverse in the last month.
Right.
In terms of people fleeing to people, well, I suppose fleeing to family homes. It seems like we're going to get a phenomenal content boom. We're already seeing it. That's why we're talking, for one thing. Based on such a sort of fearful time. And it seems to be the case throughout history in terms of these musicals being created from awful events. Why do you think people turn to the arts in the way that they do?
Well, I think the arts do a number of things. I mean, there's certainly the escapism aspect of being able to say, let me forget about my troubles for a little bit and just watch a big, fun Broadway musical number.
Sure.
But I think there's also, I mean, there's that idea of the arts being able to give you a window into somebody else's viewpoint, a window into somebody else's perception of the world. And I think in a time, especially now, where we're sorely lacking in being able to find that connection person to person, mm-hmm. it's good for us to be able to then find that connection through the arts.
Mm, absolutely. absolutely. And it seems like you've been able to capture that in 1 or 2 minute songs. Fantastic work with doing that. Why do we need, well, you kind of answered it there, but during times like this, why do we need comedy? Why do we need music? Why do we need stories?
I mean, I think it comes back to connection. It comes back to being able to have that shared experience and being able to look at something funny and laugh.
Yeah.
And not have to worry about if it's a blue laugh or a red laugh. You just enjoy the laugh, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I believe we're going to have a Spilling the Beans first, ladies and gentlemen, because for the first time ever, we've had a few bars being sung before, but I think we're now going to have a live performance, courtesy of Daniel Matarazzo. What are you going to play for us?
So I'm going to do, this is my parody of Part of Your World from The Little Mermaid. I called it Just Stay Inside.
Wonderful. Ladies and gentlemen, Daniel Matarazzo.
Look at this mess. Boy, she cray. What kind of world do we live in today? I should be hitting the hay. Instead, I am wide awake. Concerts are canned. There's no NBA. Our whole economy's in disarray. But you wouldn't know it with all of the kids who are on spring break. They've got beer bongs and tunes in Daytona. And they're snorkeling down in Nassau. They go clubbing and spreading corona. Are we surprised? This is in Florida. I wanna be where the people aren't. I wanna stream, I wanna binge watch Hulu, all from the comfort of home. I'll catch up on MTV. Flipping through channels is not so hard. Try HBO or pay-per-view. You have the whole world at your hands, so please don't go outside. When will we learn? And I don't mean to fuss, but there are things more important than us. So I know it's a chore, but please don't ignore. Just stay inside. And when we're all free, in a month or three, we'll be back side by side.
Fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. Dan, thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thanks. Thanks so much for having me.